Okay. All right. Good. We should be in good shape now. Okay, guys. I did mute everybody just to keep control of the background noise. I see we have quite a few on the line with us today. We heard from New York, Indiana, and Robert. Where's Robert from? I'm gonna have to look that up. But I see we've got 516 and 845 and 267 and 920 317 562 319. A bunch of different area codes here. So I see we're all over the country today, which is a happy problem. Anyway, so we have a pretty thick agenda today. I've got three really hot topics that we really need to get accomplished today. And number one is, as most of you know, sort of the curriculum cycle that we run through in the Peak Performer and Inner Circle programs basically follow the four fundamental drivers for your martial arts school: enrollments, renewals, retention, and student quality. And each quarter we spend a particular amount of focus on each one of those areas. And first quarter this year, we're talking, I'm not going to say exclusively, but with a great degree of focus on enrollments, generating new students in the school, and all the systems wrapped around that. And today we have a couple of those areas to talk about. Number one, what's working in the market right now and what's not working so much as far as generating info calls and intro traffic. Number two, once the phone finally does ring, or we do make contact with a customer or client, a potential customer or client, how to actually get them into the school. I've been hearing some horror stories about how low show ratios are for many schools right now, and there's some fundamental reasons behind that, and some systems and tools that we can talk about that sort of fix all that. And then the third area is we do want to spend a little bit of time. We were fortunate enough to have Stephen Oliver joining us today. So when he comes back on the call, we want to talk a little bit. Oh, he made it.
Hi, I'm back. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we wanted to also, in addition to those two prime topics, and it all sort of folds into each other, talk a little bit about the economic trauma that everyone is perceiving, and in some cases is reality, in some cases isn't, and where the opportunities lie in some of that stuff, and especially positioning yourself in the market to make that matter least to you. So we want to sort of accomplish all three of those areas. So I think maybe number one, Master Oliver, if we could, go ahead.
Let me interject there for a second. I mean, you're probably going the same place, but is the line open right now, Toby?
It's not. I closed it off. We were getting a little bit of background noise, but I can sure open it if you like.
Or they can hit some number to get in if they want to get in, right?
Well, I can make that happen. I can let that happen. Hang on a second here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I was going to ask is specific concerns, issues that have arisen from Inner Circle or Peak Performers members due to, the economic situation, or at least that they feel like is arisen from, from what's going on right now. And I think maybe it's useful for us to maybe address that first and then go into, more of the practical step-by-step stuff after that. Because it is a time right now that, I would have to say very few of the school owners in NAPNA and also in Peak Performers Inner Circle have unlike myself and a few others have lived through before. And the time right now looks and feels very much, if not as close to identical as I think it would be possible to be. It looks and feels very much like 1990, 1991. Mm-hmm. And for those who are too young to remember, let me refresh your memory. The George Bush, Senior, George H.W. Bush, was in office. He had just come into office as there was a pretty terrifying recession going on, and he actually got booted out of office by Bill Clinton, and James Carville, who was his main political operative, had coined the phrase "It's the economy, stupid," which is still kind of floating around now. The irony of it is they coined the phrase "It's the economy, stupid," and Bush lost the election based on the economy 2 years after the economy had already been in a pretty strong recovery and was back to healthy, alive, and thriving. And the presidential campaign helped really make the general public feel that the economy was still weak when, in fact, it was growing again and moving forward. The confluence of events that we have right now in the economy, again, same stuff that happened in 1990-91 is, in 1990-91, I heard on somebody say on Fox News the other night that 1,200 banks went out of business and were, you know, bailed out by the government in 1991. The number I'd come up with on the internet was 788, somewhere between 788 and 1,200 banks failed in 1991. The failure was precipitated, see if this sounds familiar, by declining real estate prices that ended up with a bunch of loans in default. So throughout the country, retail business, office buildings and retail shopping centers and so forth, plus residential, all took a major plunge. And a whole bunch of savings and loans got into real trouble. And the government had to bail them out. They formed what was called the Resolution Trust Corporation in order to bail them out. And again, I mean, it couldn't be more similar to them today. The other thing that happened then is two other types of industries got massively hammered. It was airlines and the auto industry. And the airlines and the auto industry got hammered because of a spike in oil prices that changed the world's perception about cars. And suddenly the Japanese cars that were at the time smaller, more fuel efficient were much more attractive than the cars put out from Detroit. And I mean, you know, you can go on and on, but parallels are scary. The other thing that's scary, though, is that, you know, whatever many years that is ago, but 15 years later, nobody remembers that, you know, we've been there, done that before. And so, you know, is it true that the U.S. and now internationally is being hammered by a pretty bad recession? Absolutely, it's true. Does that mean that your business has to be down? Not at all. Does it mean that you've got to take different strategies than you took 2, 3, 4 years ago when the economy was strong? And does it mean that you have to look at it and take a different approach to make sure that you're one of the winners, not one of the losers in this thing? Well, absolutely, it means that. So there are strategies and systems that you need to put in place, and of course, we're going to be really hammering that home for all the Inner Circle and Peak Performer, and make sure that you guys are, stars of the industry. We want to make sure that there are as few gaps as possible in your results, so that we can, if nothing else, hold you up as a shining example to the rest of the industry, and hopefully make sure you have a good income and a, you know, happy future and process. Any questions on what's going on, though, and how you should adapt to it? And Toby, if you can open it up, if anybody wants to get in on this, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, right now we're all set. Everyone's muted right now, but if you press the number 6 on your phone, you don't need to hit star or anything like that, just number 6, you'll be unmuted, and you can you can certainly chime in and ask a question or talk about what the particular challenges are right now. While you're doing that, Master Oliver, Richard Branson did an interview the other day and was talking about exactly what you're talking about, the similarity between the 1990, recession and now, and how he still laments, of course, for a couple of personal reasons, but for a couple of, non-personal reasons, he still laments the government bailing out the airline industry because, frankly, he it's in his best interest for a couple of them to go broke because Virgin is a much more efficient, much more streamlined business. It's non-unionized. It's a very tight culture. They have lower costs. They have higher customer approval ratings. And frankly, the government bailing out the airline industry, in Richard Branson's perception, basically just gave the airline industry license to, take advantage of their customers more because they frankly didn't have a very viable business. And But anyway, I mean, we're here again, and here again. Everyone who has stepped up, that now is suddenly an expert in the industry, mostly hasn't lived through this before. So here we are again, and this is
and mostly, if they still have a martial arts school, aren't managing to do any business from the martial arts school, and are trying to supplement it with selling stuff to other people in the martial arts school.
Well, right.
So,
exactly.
You know, let's not miss that iteration of things.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely what will happen is 2008, perhaps even 2007, but 2009, there's going to be a lot of martial arts schools go out of business. And within the operation of your school, it necessitates that you get better and better and better at high-value student service from the perception of the customer. And it necessitates that you get better and better and better at overlaying lots and lots and lots of proof about the phenomenal results that you can get for your students. And it necessitates that you get much more aggressive at external into-the-community marketing and much more aggressive at internal promotional events that are designed to drive family add-ons and referrals. And it also suggests some activities and focus on how you go about the rest of your marketing. And there certainly have been trend lines in the industry. I know that, in the 80s, before, the crash, precipitated in the late 80s, early 90s, is we used to drive almost all of our traffic to newspaper advertising. And there are demographic shifts in marketing in addition to the recessionary trend that changes the way you look at these things. And I know EFC and Matman when it was founded and Maya all putting together newspaper ads and one thing or another for schools. And sometimes you can still get that to work, but the reality is if we can do a lot of effort to get a lot of semi-interested prospects and then get really good at hitting them 12, 15, 18, 20 times with very high proof-laden marketing activities to get past their senses, to get them to actually make action, that's what it's all about right now. So it's not making a broad stroke, one-tenth of a page ad in front of 50,000 people. It's getting a hot prospect list of 500, 700, 1,000 people and really going back to them over and over and over again. Toby, you and I were talking to Dan Kennedy an hour ago, and that's, same thing he reiterated to us. Instead of having a prospect list of 15,000, get a prospect list of 1,000 and communicate with them in 5 different ways, 15 different times. Before moving on.
Yeah, and again, anybody who's on the call, if you've got, I guess what we're looking for at this point is what specific issues have you stumbled across directly related to what's happening in the economy or the economy's, let's say your market's perception of what the economy is. Hit 6 on your phone and you can chime in. But I was going to reiterate what you just said because this is actually one of the things on our topic list for today was the big, I guess if you want to call it the big aha that we talked about in the Peak Performer meeting in December. And I know a large majority of the people in the Peak Performer group weren't able to make the December meeting. It was kind of a bonus meeting we threw at the end of the year.
Inner circle and coaching also. December is a hard time to get anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess if there was a big aha, this is what it was, and it's nothing new. So it's not like something new sweeping through the industry, but for the attendees, it was sort of a new concept, and it was the big blinding flash of the obvious. And what it was, perceiving your marketing, your lead flow to be like a pipeline rather than like a shotgun, and perceiving it to be a pipeline meaning when someone enters your lead system, now that's the beginning of creating a relationship with them. And it's not about, a shotgun blast of material that hits the market once and then hopefully scoop up a bunch of students. But what it is a very targeted message that drives an opt-in or drives some sort of an indication from that customer, from that prospect that they have an interest. And then we go to work on selling them. It's not, it's not a one-time try to scoop them up thing. And that was seemed to be sort of revolutionary thinking for the people in the room. And I'll tell you what the second step, the second part of that that's so important is that right now if I'm a martial arts school who had a very robust, rich 2008 of internal referral activities or parties or whatever it is where I collected a lot of leads, well, this year is going to be a much easier year for you because you've got lots and lots of warm prospects. Now, if I haven't done any of that stuff, and I still don't do any of that stuff, and I'm still going to the cold market over and over and over again with my cold messages, see, life is a lot tougher for me now because now the cold market has their defenses up, and they're very, you know, Donnie Deutsch was on last night on a panel show, and I can't remember what it was, but I think it was on CNN, and maybe it was on Fox, I can't remember. But anyway, Donnie Deutsch was on there, and he was talking about how the entire market now is thinking differently about how they buy. They're making choices differently. They're conceptualizing that whole process very differently, and we have to identify that. So what that means, now, it doesn't mean people aren't buying. In fact, people are still buying. What it is they're not rushing out and getting the thing that tickles their fancy right now. What they're doing is they're putting up their defenses and they're sort of holing up in their house and hoping not to, not to anger the gods. And if someone builds a relationship with them and they finally understand exactly how they can benefit from the product or from the service, and we create some sort of a perception of value, they're still buying. So those businesses who are not doing that, and Dan Kennedy's favorite example is the banks. You know, he has money in a bunch of different banks up there, and, you know, nobody's ever told him that he could extend his FDIC insurance up to, you know, $500,000 for free, except for one bank. One bank managed the relationship with him enough to let him know that they could serve him better. Well, it's the same thing with our cold market, with our warm prospects. We need to be constantly educating them. And here was the next part of that big aha, was if the ad didn't tickle their fancy enough to make a buying decision, but they did raise their hand, either they opted in on your website or they returned a return card or they showed up for one of your activities or one of your events or for a birthday party or a pizza party or whatever it may be, see, they didn't buy for their reasons. And you really don't know what that reason is. So we go chipping away at those reasons with our follow-up sequences. And if that parent wasn't interested in self-defense, maybe Johnny is, you know, a good boy and he stays out of trouble and he never puts himself in those situations, then beating them over the head with the self-defense message 62 times might not be the right way to go. But if three messages are about self-defense and three messages are about character development and three messages are about, you know, anti-abduction and three messages are about, you know, balance and focus and all that other stuff, well, see, now we start chipping away at all those objections. So that was the big aha from December. And feel free to chime in on that too if you have any feedback on that. But that's now how we have to be, you know, conceptualizing our marketing, or it's going to be a really tough year.
Yeah. And maybe to clarify on what some of the things that are propping up more often are, is one is you've got less responsiveness to the quote-unquote cold market. So, you know, when you draw the radius around your school and you go to people who you've never interacted with and never talked to before, who have never, you know, come into the school or visited been in a demo or whatnot, it's much more difficult to get to their defense. And that's just to reiterate what you said a minute ago, Toby. Number two is, even on info calls of people responding to your stuff, you're going to have more people who are price sensitive. And so they're asking about pricing, they're asking about how much it's going to be, they're asking about what it is, because and keep in mind, in your market, very few people who are the consumers in your market have actually had an impact on this. Some have lost their jobs, but I mean, that's, you know, there's been a 1% or 2% uptick in that. So, you know, 2 out of 100 maybe. But a lot of them have been inundated with what was estimated at $1 billion worth of advertising by the Obama campaign, and a constant barrage of CNN and Fox and MSNBC and ABC, CBS, et cetera, telling them about how bad things are out there. So people truly are scared. And in some cases, they went to try to refinance their house to get some money, or they had their credit card limits cut, or they had their interest rates and their credit cards increased. And there's all kinds of stuff like that that are making them fearful. So you'll have on intro calls more people asking about price, on the intro process more people weighing the value and making, you know, less snap decisions. In the renewal process, it puts more and more of a burden on you to show them the great disproportionate value to the expense and the lifetime benefits. And so although opportunities are created, I mean, you know, one opportunity clearly is that an awful lot of the rinky-dink competitors in their area that are counterproductive for you to have around to begin with are going to go out of business. I mean, that's a benefit for you. Another benefit is the fact that you're going to really hone in on getting each piece of the operation really strong. And then when the economy comes roaring back, and if the past is any indication of the future, we're probably in a trough right now, and first quarter is bleak, and second quarter is mediocre, and third quarter is pretty strong, and fourth quarter is really strong. So as soon as the economy comes back, as you've really gotten better and better and better at each piece of your process, is you'll do multiples of what you've done in the past.
Yeah, Dan said the other day, remember, he was in the middle of writing a new report for members of another niche, of the restaurant niche. And I think the title of the report was something like Economic Times Force Restaurant Owners to Systemize systemize and monitor their business. Like systemizing your business is some new revolution in the industry that, you know, most restaurants are so unsystemized that now, since the economy is so bad, they actually have to go figure out how to systemize, you know, customer acquisition and customer experience management and things like that, you know. So, I mean, we're a little bit in that same sort of a genre where there's so many schools out there that just don't have their arms around their business at all that this is really going to be difficult for them, you know. But for us, for the Usins, this is just opportunity. Good. So any specific questions about that or comments about that, specific challenges that you're seeing that maybe don't fit into those categories? You can hit 6 on your phone and you'll be unmuted.
Hi, it's okay. Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, Jonathan, before you go any further, are you still available in about 40 minutes when we get done with this call?
Absolutely.
Okay. So as soon as we get done, we'll just give me a call back, and we'll focus on some of your specific needs.
Great. There's a piece of property I want to talk about.
Okay.
Happy problem.
It's a good time for that if you can get the financing done.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Now's a great time to be a buyer, right?
Yeah. Right. So here's been one of my approaches to this, and I'd like to, you know, have your thoughts on it. What I've done is I've reduced my print media advertising budget by about 20%. And what I've done instead is I've taken something about 3 times that size, and I'm calling it the customer service budget. And that what I'm going to be using that budget for is premiums and giveaways and, you know, internal marketing campaigns to generate referrals and make sure my retention is, you know, more solid, because it seems like my response to my print media advertising is gone real far down, and I'm hoping to get a referral system that really drives traffic. So question number one would be, am I on the right track? And question number two would be, what would you recommend spending the money on?
You want to take that one first, sir?
Yeah. Well, I think you're on the right track. Now, when you say print media, I'm assuming you're meaning like newspapers and such.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep my internet, you know, marketing going strong, but that's relatively cheap. The newspaper response has gone down. I've never really gotten good results from direct response marketing, but I think that's just because I'm not very good at it yet. So I'm going to keep trying that.
Yeah. Well, so maybe summarizing that this way, I would increase your budget on direct mail to warm prospects.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime somebody raises their hand, I would do more elaborate stuff, more frequent stuff, and more repetition on warm prospects. And at the same time, I would definitely feel like you're on the right track, pulling money out of newspapers that are getting less responsive and marriage mail type of things, Lowe's Valpak, Money Mailer, all that kind of thing. So I'd say you're on the right track, other than you don't want to cut down on or eliminate your external marketing. You want to redirect it in ways that are going to be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. And then the concept of allocating money for internal use, I think that's absolutely right. Now, the question of what do you use it for? And, you know, let's talk about the customer service side, because I think that's the fuzzier side, right? Is what? How do you spend more money on individual students in order for them to feel, you know, the sense of reciprocity, for them to feel like you're going above and beyond for them, and ultimately so that at the margin, if they get a little bored and are thinking about bailing out, that they don't do it, right? So you know, what are some of the things you could do with that? Well, you know, one is getting a lot better at knowing what's going on in everybody's life and recognizing it. So, and you know, this is a staff-intensive thing to do, but it's getting to know birthdays and sending them, you know, for instance, Mrs. Fields cookies on their birthday. It's knowing about the trip to the hospital for the tonsils being removed and sending flowers or something to the hospital. It's knowing about the new baby being born and sending a big congratulations basket for the new birth. And a lot of that stuff requires you to develop. See, if I go, for instance, on the opposite side, if I have 300 students and I go, you know, go buy 300 stuffed karate bears and give them all a stuffed karate bear when they come in for class. Well, that's cool, but I don't feel special because everybody got it, right?
Hmm.
On the other hand, if it's my birthday or it's my anniversary or it's the anniversary of my job promotion or if we just had the new baby or any special event, if I suddenly get a big, you know, batch of Mrs. Fields cookies or a big bouquet of flowers at the airport or at the hospital or whatever, that has an impact. Because how many other people that they have a business or a teaching relationship with did that? And you know, I'll tell you, the answer is probably nobody.
Hmm.
So the more you can get kind of, you know, in those type of special moments and get something to them at that point in time, you know, the better. Does that part make sense?
That does make sense. I don't have the kind of memory who's good at that kind of thing, is there a software package you could recommend that's good for managing that kind of thing?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I imagine Champions Way, and I know Infusion, a lot of these different database management systems can keep track of that stuff. The hard part is finding out all the stuff to begin with, right? And the most important ones are the things where you've got to be doing better what you should be doing anyway, which is talking to the parents and talking to the kids and knowing what's going on in their life and knowing what special events are going on. And you know, if you have a big staff or a staff that's 10 times bigger than it should be, like yours, Jonathan, you've got to train everybody on your staff to be constantly thumping people, you know, and figure out some kind of reporting mechanism to sit down at the end of the night and say, you know, who found out something that's interesting in somebody's life that we can discuss.
Hmm.
That makes sense.
By the way, almost all those packages in the industry will do birthdays. Most have an anniversary field too, like Dojo Pro, ASF's thing, and Champions Ways thing, and Kicksoft. Almost all the software packages you can queue up and know when somebody's birthday is 30 days, 60 days, 90 days ahead. And by the way, one of the things that we do in this little school down here is Century has those little baby bibs. They're blue and pink, and they say, "I fight dirty," which is, like, very funny.
Right.
We always send those to any new birth in the school. That's a big winner, you know. You know, Metro Operator, if I had one thing to add to that, by the way, I think I would invest money in social events, things that kind of bring the school together as a community. So if you're already doing the seasonal, you know, St. Patrick's Day party or the New Year party, Christmas party, whatever, I think I'd double that effort. You know, I mean, if there's any excuse, like, for example, the third week in January next week is National Elvis Presley Month. I mean, National Elvis Presley Week. And since Elvis was a black belt, you know, in the school, we're doing this big thing where the kids can come in and wear bell-bottom pants and, you know, have big sideburns and do, like, Elvis things, right? Well, it's obviously a built-in referral mechanism, but it's also like this, you know, how you create that social community in your school that kind of anchors people in, you know what I mean? So I think I would allocate some of that budget to facilitating some social events that can drive referrals but also drive people to really think about your school as, like, the social hub of the family, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, I think that's absolutely right. And in all kinds of different ways to make it, you know, more special and more interesting without being ridiculous. I mean, you don't need to do a big kids event that has sterling silver, you know, for cutting the pizza. But a great idea, and I won't take credit for this one. This was a Chris Rapolt idea. And it may have been a bounce off of some of the things that we do at My Life Friday with the school's outreach. But he did a once-a-year banquet to honor the educators in the community. And I thought it was just a fabulous idea, because what it was is each teacher or each child in the school designated their favorite teacher as somebody deserving of being honored. And so he hosted a banquet. And, you know, and I don't recall now, I mean, how elaborate the banquet was and stuff, but what it was is, you know, they would buy little trophies for all the teachers, and they would, you know, have the kids host their teacher and bring them in and do a big deal about the awards presentation for all of the recognized teachers. And, of course, at every elementary school where one of the teachers was recognized, they'd invite the principal and the other administrative people to come down for their little presentation. Now think about how much goodwill that would engender in the community. And, you know, I'm not sure what the cost was, but if you think of, you know, maybe if your cost was $20 per teacher who was invited and there was 100 of them, it's not a whole lot. So if you invested $2,000 to $5,000, but what's the ripple effect that would go along with that?
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
And sure. So, oh, absolutely. Well, and by the way, it's so good, Toby, that I taught it to all of our My Life Friday franchise schools 10 years ago and got nobody to do it.
Right.
you know, that's the problem with good ideas, is getting somebody
teacher
to implement.
Teacher appreciation.
Born with a silver spoon in your mouth, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, yeah, a teacher appreciation banquet. And again, I wouldn't think of this as being elaborate. But, you know, I mean, it could be, and I think he did it at the martial arts school. You know, in our case, we can have Qdoba cater food for, I don't know, $7 or $8, $10 a head. And so if you ended up with 50 teachers there at $10 a piece, you've got $500 in food costs. But, you know, a couple $1,000 invested in something like that, I think would have just a huge ripple effect. And there's probably ways to expand that idea too. If the kids nominated their favorite pediatrician, you know, nominated their favorite dentist, and, you know, And Toby, you have all those crazy holidays. I'm sure there's a Dental Appreciation Week or Dental Health Week or something.
Sure, sure.
There's certainly a, you know, a Teacher Appreciation Week or something like that. But there's all kinds of ways to expand that and create a deal that, that ultimately would, I think, secondhand create a lot of enrollments, but certainly immediately engender a lot of goodwill in the area.
Absolutely. That's pretty brilliant. Is that helpful, Jonathan?
Yeah, that's great.
Brilliant. Well, I had one more item on my list, Master Oliver, that we should probably get to, is a little bit of nuts and bolts, and I've got sort of a, I don't want to say it's a secret I want to let out of the bag, but something that's been really, really, really useful, and it's not that difficult to fulfill, but there's a huge bump in response rate on the deal, is this, I call it like a little thinking of you system. And really what this is now we know now that it's going to be difficult to get people to raise their hand. And once they do, we have to treat them like gold, right? Once we finally get the phone to ring, you know, I'm reminded, by the way, of a conversation I had by email with a member through Bob Dunn, the chief sales guy here at Atma, and the gentleman was super nice and really frustrated and really having a hard time driving enrollments, and he wrote a 4-page long email, and I read every word of it, and it was kind of painful to me. But what it described was how he has absolutely no problem with marketing. The phone's ringing off the hook, but once someone hangs up the phone and he set the appointment up with them, just nobody is showing up for their appointment. And that was the first two sentences of the email. Now, the rest of the 4 pages was all about everything in the world he was doing except for fixing the problem, except for how to get him to show up. So he was telling me about how he's, you know, founded a 501c3 to drive traffic, and how he's done, you know, these 10 or 12 other items to drive more calls to the school, which are all great things. But if they're just not converting from call to appointment, focus some energy there, fix that problem. You don't have a marketing problem here. You've just got a show problem, right? So here were some of my bullet points, and you know, if you got a pen and paper, I think a couple of these are really worth writing down and really worth investigating and really worth implementing quickly. Number one is our quote standard procedure, of course. Well, let me back up a half a step. There's only one way to get a person to show up for their appointment. And the only way to do it is they have to want to show up, right? They have to want to meet you. They have to want to, you know, interact with you and you know, learn about what you're all about and visit the school and all that stuff. You can't make them show up if they don't want to show up, right? So I think what's worth the effort is trying to step inside their head, you know, walk a mile in their shoes and think about what would make you really want to show up. And there's ways that we can sort of make it obligatory, and we can sort of put the onus of responsibility on them so that they feel, you know, like they would be letting you down if they didn't show up. And, you know, there's a lot of things like that we can do, and it's all useful. And here are a few of my bullet points. And this is sort of the system that we use to make them, quote, want to show up. In fact, we extend it to the second intro as well to make them, quote, want to come back. Right? So here's some of the bullet points. Number one, and most of these you can automate with software. We have it very systemized and very automated in the school so that, you know, the school owner doesn't have to be manually doing all this stuff and thinking about it every day. This is just sort of an automated process that they check off the button and it sort of happens for them. But number one is if their appointment is more than 4 days away, we send them an appointment reminder postcard. And even if it's like 3 days or 4 days away, we still send it to them anyway. Maybe they get it the day of their appointment or the day after, but still we sent it. And they get it in the mail, and they sort of feel, you know, like we cared about them and we really wanted to remind them of their appointment, right? So immediately we put a stamp on an appointment postcard and send it out. Immediately when we get off the telephone with the person, we hit the button in the computer, and it sends them an email that reminds them of the date and the time of their appointment. I'm going to go back and elaborate on this in a minute, but just get the bullet points down, right? So that we send them an email immediately. And if there's any day lag time, if there's maybe 1 day or 2 days between, we'll also send them an email the day of their appointment to remind them of their appointment. We do two confirmation calls. We're going to call them the night before their appointment to reconfirm, right? And when we reconfirm the appointment, we're going to use language like, you know, Mrs. Jones, just wanted to remind you about your appointment tomorrow at 6. Is that time still good for you? You know, so you get some sort of a communication line going with them, and you find out if they're, you know, serious about making it or if they're getting flaky on you or whatever the case may be. And then you sort of use some of that obligatory language like, okay, great, you know, Mr. Jones, the instructor here, has, you know, that time set aside for you specially. So, you know, he's really looking forward to meeting you. You know, if anything were to come up tomorrow that you wouldn't be able to make it, please, you know, do me a personal favor and give me a call here at the school and let me know so I can, you know, reschedule that time for the instructor to spend time with, you know, with another client, something like that. And then before the close of that call, we're using language like, you know, our daytime program director tomorrow will reconfirm your appointment at between 10 and noon tomorrow morning. What number will you be at between 10 and noon? And we get the number that they're going to be at so that we're actually calling a number that they're likely to answer, right? So then the day of the appointment, we're going to confirm them by phone too. Now, Meshwar, is there anything on that you wanted to expand on? I wanted to get into the detail of the thinking of you part as well.
No, I think that's really good. I was just going to, when you took time for a breath, is abstain myself. We're going to now go through specific systems.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think you need my input on that. You've got that down.
Sure.
You know, I will say, just to reinforce to everybody, is sitting around and doing the same stuff you've always done and whining about how your income went down in a bad economy is not terribly commendable. Aside from everything else, if you have to work harder to get the same results, work a lot harder to get better results, work a lot harder and a lot smarter to get much better results, then that's what you go do. And, you know, back when, again, we were hitting record numbers in 1991, but, you know, we used to have every Monday we'd have a staff meeting from 10 to midnight, then we'd have a manager's meeting from midnight to 2 a.m., and, you know, work through all the stuff that we were going to do promotional activities wise, and probably at that time we're doing 10, 12 promotional activities a week rather than a month in order to get the right kind of traffic. And in fact, our standing joke was I was reading a bunch of early Bill Gates books, and, you know, the internal Microsoft thing was teasing everybody about how quick they could turn around. In other words, how late you could stay in the office and how early you could get back the next day.
Right.
Now, I know that doesn't fit with the image of I'm going to get smarter and smarter and smarter about this stuff. And my staff is going to go run everything for me, and I'm going to play with the kids and show up for 3 hours. But, you know, the reality is sometimes we have to work really hard to keep things improving, and sometimes we don't have to work as hard to keep things level or keep things improving. And I will say that, you know, next year, this coming year, is probably a time where you have to work harder in order to get better results. So you just have to put your nose to the grindstone and get with it and have lots and lots of things going on at the same time with lots of energy and enthusiasm. You know, and even in my case, you know, we're having to invest more time and effort in the individual NAP and the clients to keep them alive, and we're having to spend more and more time with individual Mile High Credit School franchisees to make sure they're really implementing all the systems that we've given them and really following through, and even the corporate-owned school, and, you know, spending an hour a week rather than an hour a month keeping them focused because it requires it right now. So, you know, don't get complacent and don't think that just because you're working harder that there's something wrong with the world. You got to do what you got to do to get it going.
Yeah, you know, I think your comment at the Peak Performers meeting was about as succinct as you could make it. You do more stuff and you do it better.
Yeah. And don't make it more complicated than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And Jonathan's going to call me when you guys get done, and I'm going to abstain myself for the time being, unless you need something specifically that I can contribute to.
I think we should be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Okay.
Really appreciate the time. So anyway, let me get back to that thinking of you component of this. So I was talking about all the follow-up steps that we take for just getting an appointment to show up, right? Now, that's the mechanics, right? Those are like the things that have to happen. Now, there's some genius behind this, and I would love to take credit for it. I'll take credit for setting the system up. I can't take credit for, you know, all the content and all that stuff, I mean, some of it, but not all of it. So we call it the Thinking of You system. And basically what the Thinking of You system is a way to make that to help that person want to show up, to really let them know that we're caring about them, that we're thinking about them. Let me take a half a step back. I've got a poster on my wall right here, and this was from one of our J. Abraham interactions a few years ago. And there are only 6 reasons why someone doesn't buy something. And in this case, we could translate that into 6 reasons someone doesn't show up for an appointment. But this is really good. This is really important for us to know as marketers and for us to know as entrepreneurs. There's 6 reasons people won't buy, right? Number one is that they don't believe that your product or service is the solution to their problem. So, you know, they have a problem. They, you know, Johnny doesn't have enough confidence. Johnny's getting picked on in school. Whatever the case may be, they have a problem, but they don't feel that you are they're not convinced that your solution is the solution to their problem. Number two is they do believe that your product or service is the solution to their problem, but they don't believe in you. So perhaps they don't believe that you're qualified. Perhaps they don't believe that you really have the track record that you claim to. Or perhaps they just don't believe something about you, something you said, something you did, just, you know, doesn't inspire their confidence. Number three is they believe in your product or service. They believe in you. Well, let me back up a little bit. Number three is they believe in your product or service, and the reason they don't believe in you is because of one of your factual assertions. So perhaps you stated a statistic that they're skeptical of. And now since they're skeptical of the statistic, they're skeptical of you in general, right? So a good example of that, you know, by the way, is I've never had it happen to me, but, you know, the anti-abduction statistics. I think it's something like 650,000 children are reported missing every year, right? Well, in that 650,000 children who are – actually, it's 800,000. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's 800,000 children reported missing every year. Well, of that 800,000, actually, I think it's something like 120,000 that are actual, quote, non-family member abductions. The rest are, you know, Johnny was reported missing because he didn't come home on time and stuff like that. Now, most people don't know that, so that one probably won't blow up in your face very often. But if something like that happens, if they're selling you the sham wow on television and you see, you know, something that makes you skeptical about one of their demonstrations. See, now you're automatically skeptical about everything, you know. The guy who has the car wax that fills in the scratches in the car, well, right away I think, well, he didn't scratch it very deep, did he? So automatically I'm now skeptical of the entire commercial, of all the benefits of the product because of one factual assertion that I'm not comfortable with. So that's number three. Number four is they believe in your product or service. They believe in you, but they don't believe that you understand them. You don't understand their specific situation. You don't understand their problem as thoroughly as you should if you're going to be the solution to it, right? So these are all things, by the way, that you should be writing down vigorously and you should be integrating into your follow-up sequences. So if you can start solving these objections, you'll start increasing your response rate, your responsiveness, your response rates, and also the rate that people show up. So let me quickly blast through the first four again. Number one, they don't believe your product is the solution to their problem. Number two, they do believe the product is the solution to their problem, but they don't believe in you. Number three is the reason they don't believe in you is because they're skeptical of one or more of your factual assertions. Therefore, they're skeptical of the entire message. Number four is they do believe in you, they do believe in your product or service, and they do believe it's the solution to their problem, but they don't believe that you understand them. They don't believe that you understand their situation. It's the quote, but my thing is different argument. You know, well, you may have helped, you know, children with ADHD in the past, but you haven't met my son Jonathan yet, right? That's what they're thinking. So you have to go to work solving that objection. Number five is, so reiterate again, number four is they do believe in your product and they do believe in you, but they don't believe that you truly understand them. So you certainly have to go to work making them understand that you do. Number five is they do believe in your product or service. They do believe in you, They do believe that you understand them and their circumstances, but they don't believe in the value argument that you're putting forward. They believe your thing is the solution, but they don't believe it's worth X dollars. Okay? And last but not least, in fact, you should put a star by number 6. This is a very advanced sort of concept that that really deserves to be explored and, you know, really some time taken on, but, you know, we don't have that today. Number 6 is they believe in your product or service. They believe in you. They agree with your value arguments. They agree with everything, but they have an inarticulated, in most cases, an unarticulated lack of belief in themselves. And that could be for two different reasons. Number 1, it could be they don't believe that they'll follow through. How many times have you heard, you know, a parent say, well, I don't want to, you know, force him to come to class, or I don't want to argue with him and fight with him and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Well, in reality, they do, because if they value it, you know, they're going to make sure that it happens. But we have to persuade them that's justifiable, that's how it's supposed to be. And then the second part of that is that they don't believe that, put to the test, they can really accomplish what you're saying that they can accomplish. So, for example, in weight loss, you know, the prospect is saying in their head, well, I've been on 62 diets already and none of them have worked. I'm not going to try number 63, not because I don't believe number 63 doesn't work, but because I know I'll fail at it and I don't want to feel bad about myself again, right? I'd rather feel bad about, you know, being, you know, overweight than I am about, you know, failing in another diet, right? So those are the 6 primary objections that we have to solve, right, in all of our marketing and all of our sales activities. So when we're talking about converting from an info call to an appointment, that's our frame of reference, right? Some of that has to do with establishing credibility with ourselves. A lot of it is solved by using social proof and testimonials and all that sort of stuff. So let's go back to this from info call to appointment show sequence. What do you think all that's about? Well, it's not about, you know, me saying how great of an instructor I am, or you know, how big my location is or anything like that. It's about solving those 6 problems. It's about solving that they don't believe in me. So in the copy of the emails that they get confirming their appointment, it has testimonials. It has social proof. It has other people just like them who've had a great experience in our school, and you can too. That's sort of the argument. So let me move to the next step in the system, because this is the big winner. This is like the big aha, and everybody should immediately go copy this and implement it, because it's massively influential in the experience for your customers. I call it the thinking of you system, and we use it in both the intro to enrollment process and also – info call to intro process, but also from intro 1 to intro 2 and enrollment. We do our enrollments on the second intro. So what we want to make sure happens is when the student goes home after the intro 1, that they know that we care about them, they know that we understand their specific problem, their specific issues, their specific benefit needs, that sort of thing. So in our software system, we have a section of options, right? And when we're on the telephone confirming an appointment or setting up an appointment, we're asking those questions that I'm sure everybody asks. You know, what specifically is it that you're interested in seeing your son or daughter get out of a martial arts program? And if they say self-defense, we have a little button that says self-defense and we checkmark it, right? Or if they say focus or whatever the case may be, we question them down and we find the core key chief benefit that they really are looking for. And we have a specific follow-up sequence. So if their hot button, if their specific needs are, you know, Johnny has a confidence issue in school. He doesn't raise his hand to ask questions because he's afraid he'll be wrong. You know, that's what we need to fix. Then we checkmark the confidence button and we hit submit. And the email that they get is filled with testimonials from parents just like them who have children who had confidence issues and now who are black belts and don't, right? So it's very, very well orchestrated to specifically identify, to specifically answer the questions and the challenges that they have. Not what we think they have, but what we've identified that they have, if that makes sense. So now here's the second part of the thinking of you system. After the person shows up for their first we go through the whole querying process again. So we got the information from them on the telephone, and of course, if they signed up on the internet, we get the information from the web form that they fill out, right? They check their specific benefits and all that stuff. So now, once they come in for the intro appointment, we're again questioning them. So we have them fill out the question sheet. I'm sure you guys are all using some sort of a new member survey or something like that, where they're identifying to you what their challenges are and they're identifying what benefits they're looking for. And then again, we go data enter that. We check mark the box in the computer. And the day that they do their intro, we stick a stamp on the letter that day that goes out to that person. And the letter that goes out to that person is, now keep in mind, in our structure, we do one intro. We give them the big DVD package and all that sort of stuff. They go home. We make them watch the DVD and answer the questions and bring it back for their second intro. Well, and then at their second intro, we're doing the enrollment. So we have basically a two-touch system, a two live meeting system to enroll them. So now they're going to get this big letter in the mail that night. That night, so they'll get it in a day or 2 days. And the package that we send them is called the quote-unquote thinking of you system. And it's a cover letter that mail merges in the specific benefits and the child's name and all that stuff. And the letter says something like this, dear Mrs. Jones, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed meeting you and Johnny. And it just merges in their name, you know, student's first name, all that sort of stuff. And it says, I'm especially looking forward to helping you with X. And X is the specific benefit, the chief benefit that they checked off or that they told us about in through the conference. And it says, you know, something like, I really look forward to helping you build Johnny's sense of confidence and, through our program. By the way, I came across this article or this report in my instructor certification program, and I remembered it while we were speaking, and I thought that it might be of value to you. So, for example, a great example is one of these situations that turned out to be a huge social proof benefit and just a big winner for us is we had a child in one of the schools that had pediatric bipolar. So he had, bipolar disorder, basically. He had a mood disorder, which is basically like manic depressive. But he had the pediatric version, which is a very specific disorder and handled a very specific way. And we put all of our instructors through a system that helps them deal with pediatric bipolar. So we have like this 12-page report on how our instructors are taught to deal with pediatric bipolar and how pediatric bipolar can be, an advantage in martial arts and how they can hyper-focus at times when it's necessary and, all that stuff. So think about this parent who brought in their student who has been diagnosed with this mental, emotional challenge, with this, this emotional disability, for lack of a better term, and think about how skeptical she is about, look, I don't know, you don't understand this kid. You don't understand my son. He can get violent, he can get angry, he can get mean, he can be happy, all that stuff. Now think about all of that that goes away, all of that hesitation and all of that objection and all of that sort of conflict, I don't know how to describe it any better, but think about how much of that just melts away when mom opens up the hand-addressed envelope that I sent her from the school that says, Dear Mrs. Jones, I look so forward to helping with Johnny's focus level. By the way, we talked about his pediatric bipolar disorder, and I thought that you'd find this information valuable. And that information is all about how we've walked a mile in your shoes. We've dealt with students like this before with great results. Here's some testimonials and some social proof about it. Here's what we know about the disorder. Here's what our instructors are trained to deal with. Here's how we're going to handle it when he becomes, irritated or aggravated or violent, right? And here's how we're going to handle it when he's, enthusiastic and happy and interactive, right? So think about how easy the sale now becomes, right? Or how that person now wants to show back up for their second intro, right? They're not just like, determining whether they want to show up or not. They've now felt like you really understand them and you really have, done your homework. And they know that when they come back in for lessons that it's going to be a positive experience for the son or daughter, right? So does that make sense? Now, I'm going to give you a resource before we get off the call today where you can go get some of this stuff. But Any questions about this for right now? I know I went really fast. Any questions about the six objections, why people don't buy, or how this system sort of folds in, and if you feel it's valuable, if you don't feel it's valuable, let me know what your thoughts are. Any thoughts on that? Hit six on your phone, and you'll be unmuted. You can chime in while my vocal cords rest for like a half a second. Any questions about that specifically?
Hey, Toby, it's Thomas from New York.
Hey, man, what's going on, brother?
Nothing, brother. Listen, I just want to let you know, I mean, you know, talking with what Jonathan said earlier about the print advertising not working, I mean, I totally agree, and I think the information that you're giving us here, you know, is really vital, especially when, you know, we're implementing this stuff to make sure that what we are getting for calls are locked down.
Yeah, you got to treat these guys like gold. And you know, I know it's no one on this call, but I cannot tell you how frustrating it is. I'm here at NAPMA all the time. My cell phone's all the time. I talk to school owners every day from, you know, up to 26 countries, right? I was just on the phone with someone from Newfoundland the other – not Newfoundland. The other one, the Nordic one, Netherlands, the other day. And you know, I can't tell you how frustrating it is when you have a, let's call it a quote, very traditional instructor in a very small school, and they really, really love their students. They really love their prospects. They really love the opportunity to change people's lives. They really love their business. They love to do the thing. But ask them to call and confirm the appointment twice, and it's like you reached in and stole their soul, you know? It's like, well, look, if you really love the prospect that much, isn't it your duty to make sure that they enroll in your school and to make sure that they learn to be a black belt and to make sure that they become a student? I mean, isn't that a responsibility to that person? You know what I mean? So I appreciate your feedback. I mean, it's a very frustrating experience to – you know, have someone out of one side of their mouth say, well, yeah, I really love them and I really love to do this and this is really what I want to do. But, you know, don't make me call them. I don't want to call them back. I mean, I don't want to send them a letter or send them an email. Or it's so much work to write their name on a report and send it. I don't think I can do all that. Well, look, you know what I mean? You know, anyway, but I appreciate the feedback. Thank you. And thanks for listening to me, you know, vent. But thanks. I think that's very useful. Any other specific thoughts on this, you know, thinking of you system, how this can roll out, how this can work, any technical challenges you perceive, anything like that I can help you with? And I will give you a resource to get a bunch of this stuff in just a moment. But any other thoughts on that?
Toby, this is Eric Contrella. How are you doing?
Hey, Eric. How's it going, man?
Doing great. Do you think, do these thinking of you things always have to be something that you personally create, or can you use like generic articles and things and just put a sticky note on? Will that lessen the effect or still be effective?
No, I think it is. In fact, that's what I was going to tell you is, the resource I'm going to give you is just all public domain stuff.
Okay.
So it's all free. You can go out and get it whatever you want. Like for example, the pediatric bipolar, that is basically a combination of a government report on that disorder and some testimonials, other, you know, internal students that we've extracted who had emotional problems. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a hybrid of both. Now, let me tell you, since it's 6 minutes after and we're going to run out of time here anyway, everybody write this down. The public domain laws in the U.S. Basically state that one of the things that it states is anything written by a U.S. government employee for public consumption is in the public domain, which means everyone owns it. It means you can take it and do whatever you want with it. You can sell it, you can change it, you can modify it, you can learn from it, you can do whatever you want with it, right? Now, you have to be very careful when you're looking for this stuff that you make sure that it was written by a government employee, it was on a government website or something like that, and it wasn't linked in from someone else's privately owned material, right? But if you go to the health department of the United States, if you go, I think it's, and I don't have it in front of me. I thought that I would remember what it is, but if you just type into Google, you know, United States Health Department or United States Mental Health Department or whatever, you'll find all sorts of articles on childhood obesity, pediatric bipolar, ADHD, all these resources. And they're going to be little reports. And what Eric is saying is exactly right. You can take one of those reports, make sure it's in the public domain, make sure there's no copyright on it or anything like that. Now, you know, are you really going to get in trouble if you use somebody's copyrighted stuff to send to a parent? Probably not, but you know what I mean. To be really, really totally legit, if you use something that was on a government website that a government employee wrote and is not copywritten, you can use it verbatim. You can use it exactly how it is. You can change it. You can do whatever you want. So you can go to the United States Health Department and you can download the document on ADHD, and you can stick a little handwritten cover letter on the front of it that says, you know, "Dear Mrs. Smith," and here's a secret on this, by the way. You take a white sheet of paper with a black Sharpie, and you write "Dear," and then leave a blank, and then you write, "I thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed meeting you," and leave a blank. "I really look forward to helping, you know, you and," leave a blank, "reach your goals of building your blank." You know what I mean? And then you photocopy it on the photocopier. Now all you have to do is go in and fill in the names and the benefits, right? I mean, that's a real, like, low budget, no computer involved way to do this really quickly. And then it's a handwritten little note that Mrs. Jones thinks that you went to the desk and you researched this thing and pulled it out and sent this to her. So I think in some cases, you know, that's even more effective. In fact, Eric, our letter prints out in like a handwriting font on yellow legal pad paper. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So we make it look real one off. You know, in fact we've had negative situation every now and then when we have like a brother and a sister that enroll at different times, and the program director sends the same letter out to both and forgot that the other one got it before. So you do have to be a little bit careful with that. But they still appreciate that it's a system. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
So I think you're exactly right. I don't think that hurts at all. In fact, I think that's the resource that I wanted to give you was, you know, everybody just go to, you know, U.S. government websites. In fact, I think that there's an entire website on ADHD, if I'm not mistaken. But you'll find just reams and reams and reams of resources. Just be very careful that you're not being linked to someone else's website and that you're actually using copyrighted material. But so on a scale of 1 to 10, is that useful? Be able to sort of tap into all that stuff for free?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty strong, you know?
Thank you.
Good, good, good. Any other questions on that? I know we're running, guys. Any other thoughts on this whole process, this whole system?
No, Toby, that's good, man. Real quick, just if you get a moment this afternoon, can you give me a call here in New York?
I had somebody's breaking up a little bit. Who is that?
It's Robert from New York.
Hey, Robert, how you doing?
Good. I said that information's great. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to know if you had an opportunity later this afternoon, if you could just give me a quick call. It's about that email I sent you about the building.
I am back to back, Robert, today until 7 Eastern. But Kern and Terry Bryan both want to talk to you.
Okay,
and
I spoke with Terry yesterday, and
money.
His information was fantastic.
Privately with the bank. Now, Terry's deal might be even better, where he can actually help you, you know, find money privately within your own little community there. But I can connect you with both of those guys. So I'll shoot you an email. Shoot me an email again to remind me. But I'm booked until after 7:30 tonight. Shoot me an email, and I'll make sure you guys get it.
All right, awesome.
Good, good, good. And your phone is worse than mine, so. Okay, guys, good. Look, if you have any questions about this, you know, jot them down. We've got shoot them over to me on email if you like, on the discussion board, definitely. I've got copies of this stuff that I'll try to bring for you at the next live meeting. If you haven't booked your hotel for the Denver event, you might want to do that right away. The block still has about 50% of the rooms in it, so we're not full yet, but it's going to get full pretty quickly. I've got another big mail piece that hits I think in about 4 more days, so we'll probably fill up the event by the end of the month, maybe the beginning of next month. So make sure you get your hotel rooms booked. Someone asked a question about getting the block extended for the 2 days before and the 2 days after for the Be Performer Inner Circle, and I put that ball in motion today. So hopefully we'll have that extended out there, and they'll guarantee the rate for those extra days too. But you would want to get those conference days booked up as quick as you can. Anyway, so any questions about that, let me know. I really appreciate your time today, guys. Thanks so much, and I'm really glad that we had some time with Master Oliver today too. Anytime that guy gets on a roll, man, you just got to get the pen out because it's worth it, you know. Anyway, thanks so much for your time. If you guys need anything, shoot me an email or put it up on the discussion board, and we'll help you out. Thank you so much. Oh, one last thing. Oh, before you hang up, one last thing. I sent you an email on this already, but I'm happy to have feedback on the recession self-defense video series. It's natma.com/recession-self-defense And I've got a series of seven of them. So keep your eyes out for those things. I've got some interesting tools, kind of like what we're talking about today. Maybe not quite as high of a level because the market's a little different. You know, they're not quite as sophisticated as most of you guys are. So more than welcome to check all that stuff out too. Okay, guys, thanks so much. Really appreciate your time. Speak to you soon.